Hello, this is Bonsai Retro Club. Can you dig it? I'm Dave, and what I want to let you know is you are listening to a part one episode of a great topic in which we covered our favorite albums of the 1990s. The discussion lasted for well into 2 hours, and so it has been broken up into hour chunks so that you, the listener, can easily digest. But we'll be posting the second part of this episode later the same week. So please tune in to listen to the second part after you get done listening to this first part. We continue to appreciate you, our listener, and thank you for being part of our club. Here's the show.
You are listening to a Banzai Retro Club podcast. Language and topics may not always be appropriate for younger listeners. Press 1 for a groovy topic from the 1970s. Press 2 for an awesome topic from the 1980s. Or press 3 for a slamming topic from the 1990s. Please choose now. Too late. We have made your selection for you. Let's start the show.
Why are we here, Dave?
We are here to do like a podcast and stuff.
Yeah.
Something retro, something blah, blah, blah.
So are we going right into that then?
I'm ready to jump into this one. I got a few good albums that I want to talk about for sure.
All right. Oh. Cool. Somebody dinged me here. Let me see what this is about. Oh, never mind. Nothing important.
This is 90-something podcast.
I know it sounds mental, but sometimes I have more fun vegging out than when I go partying. Maybe because my party clothes are so binding.
You're an idiot.
I'll show you. Starting tomorrow, you'll see I'm just as sane as anybody.
But I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown. I amuse you. I make you laugh. I'm here to fucking amuse you. What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
Smelly cat, smelly cat. What are they feeding you?
Mentos, the fresh maker.
Alright, so this is Bonsai Retro Club. Can you dig it?
Dig it.
We are on episode
9.
And we're going to be covering our favorite 90s music albums. So this is Dave. Online, I have got Rose.
Hiya.
And Scott.
Hello.
So, what we've decided is that, you know, we've just got so many different avenues that we can go with this whole Bonsai Retro Club thing, and our chatting between each other, we were like, you know, what the hell are we going to do tonight? We were tossing around different ideas, and somebody landed on the great idea of 90s music. And as I alluded to on our Meet the Host episode, this is actually something that's I thought was the turning point for me as kind of having a different breadth of musical likes, because as I described myself in the 80s stuff, I'm kind of, as I put it, vanilla, because I was just like listening to the stuff that was kind of predominant, right? What was played majority of the time on the radio or MTV or just the top 40 hits. So I didn't really get into deep tracks, whereas you two have had that kind of love to dig deeper into stuff. And it wasn't until the 90s when I started with my career in the Navy where I got introduced to just a plethora of different musical tastes and starting to appreciate them. So I'm hoping that my favorites kind of show that. What was your approach to the topic, Rose?
I was actually... Where was I? Anyone that knows me knows that I don't want to say I'm not a big fan of the 90s, because there are certain genres of music that I do appreciate specifically from the 90s. And there's a lot of really good turning points in the 90s for music that were extremely, you know, I don't even know what I'm going to say. They're monumental. That's too big of a word. Life changing is just, yeah.
Pivotal?
It is really big deal. You know, there's like, you know, you remember the 90s for different styles of music that, you know, it's like the 80s. You remember the 80s for different styles in the 70s, but the 90s, you know, had that turning point to where, you know, that there was always going to be something remembered from that era. Mm. And even though we had the boy bands and the Spice Girls and whatever other crap was out there that people are finding amazing, there were significant music genre changes that were set in motion that we will always have.
We will not have any Spice Girl bashing on this show.
Okay.
No Spice Girl bashing. I'm just saying. I will mute you.
You can mute me now if you want. Seriously. You can mute me now if you like.
I'm going to avoid the Spice Girls like I avoided Dirty Dancing.
Yeah. Naughty, naughty. Anyway. Yeah, so the thing about my interest in the 90s, as everyone knows, I really wasn't listening to mainstream secular music in the 90s. I was like heavy Christian music. I was listening to hymns, or I was listening to people like Stephen Curtis Chapman and Russ Taft and Keith Green, and, you know, it just went all and on. Mylon Lefebvre, any type of big gospel choirs. They had the mass choirs back then. That was a big deal. But it didn't really hit me until later when I decided, you know, okay, well, maybe I should listen to other stuff now, and kind of moved away from that time in my life. And then the 90s was kind of like, oh, look at what they've got. Let's dig a little further. So trying to find my top three was fairly easy because I started listening to this in like 2000, so the top three of my favorite albums just flew, boom, into existence. So,
all right, very cool. Actually, so Scott, what about you? What's your approach to this topic? Now, I know you were a heavy metal, hard rock guy. Does this play into that at all?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. That taste continued on in the 90s for sure. Not into the evolution of what we knew as heavy metal in the 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, the evolution of that kind of went into the whole grunge thing, and I did not follow that path. So I still liked the hard rock and heavy metal, but it wasn't the grunge that that kind of really took over the scene. There are a few albums out there that are from that sound that I like, but the albums that I'm looking at are not from that. And I'll tell you, this topic, you know, it scared me at first because I keep thinking back. I'm like, man, I can't place, like I can't think back. Okay, I can think back to the 80s and go, this album, this album, this album, boom, boom, boom. I can name, you know, 30 different albums that came out in the 80s that I remember them specifically, very, very specifically. But in the 90s, I'm going, okay, wait. I started listening to more single stuff, just stuff on the radio. Like, I wasn't going out and buying albums the way I did in the 80s. And I think it had a lot to do with the change, the shift, not to digital music because we weren't there yet, even though it was CDs. But I remember going out and buying in the 80s, you know, cassettes or LPs in the early 80s and sitting and listening to the whole album, where I don't remember doing that in the 90s. I just don't remember doing it. Maybe because I started to work full time and, you know, just got married in the 90s and just things shifted. So I guess I wasn't just paying attention. So this topic kind of scared me.
You also had technology shift too. I mean, where you had albums and cassettes in the 80s, 90s were all about the CDs.
Yes.
And it was just so easy to jump from track to track, and you didn't have to listen to a whole album if you didn't want to.
Yeah, that is part of that shift, that technology shift too. Not nearly as drastic as digital, the digital age of MP3s and WMA4s and all that, or WAM, you know, all that stuff. So,
right.
Anyway, so that's how I approached it. I knew I had to go back and look, and I had to look some stuff up and go, okay, now I know. Yes, oh, that was a great. Now that I'm listening to it, I remember that's a great album from the mid 90s or late 90s or whatever. So
it's all right. So, listener, based on the three of our approaches to this topic, I can pretty much guarantee that you're not going to get any Spice Girl album, or you're not going to get any boy band. But let's find out. Let's find out together. I guess, Rose, lead us off. What's your first?
Oh. Well, and I'm not sure if we're doing like a top three, like a 3-2-1 or...
No, just what we're doing, whatever you feel, whatever order you feel like sharing with us.
Okay. Now I'm gonna kind of let's say I'm cheating. I don't think that's cheating. So anybody that knows my musical taste and knows who my favorite band is, knows that my favorite band is Aha, and so. Believe it or not, people out there that don't listen to they actually had a couple albums in the 90s. And one of the albums that I listened to on a regular basis, because Wednesdays at my desk is Aha Day. So,
okay, cool.
Yeah, I know. And I listen to most of the stuff that I have. I usually listen to the first two albums I listened to, Hunting High and Low and Take on Me. I mean, sorry, Hunting High and Low, Scoundrel Days. That's, I think the first two, with this 85 and 87, I think. But they had a break for a while. They didn't do an album till 1988. And then 1990, I believe, was when this album came out that I listened to. It's called East of the Sun and West of the Moon. And it was taken from a Norwegian fairy tale. So just the album, its title itself. So there are 11 songs on the album. And for some reason, it's kind of back to front. It starts off with a song called Seemingly Nonstop July and ends in Crying in the Rain. But if you look at the jacket cover, it starts off with Crying in the Rain and ends with Seemingly Nonstop July. So I'm not sure what happened there, if that was like a processing error or something weird. But all of the songs on there are so much more different than the radio-ready stuff that they had with their three previous albums. Definitely is a far cry from Hunting High and Low. The one cover that they have on here, Crying in the Rain, was actually... I was really upset when I first saw that, because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, why are you doing a cover? But then I didn't really listen to it for a while. But
I lost you first thing in there. Who did you say that was by?
What?
You said Crying in the Rain was a cover to...
I didn't say who it was.
Oh, you didn't say? I'm sorry. Like, my end went silent just for a second, so I didn't want to miss
it. Oh, no, it's fine. I'm trying to think. I think it was the Everly Brothers. I'm not sure. I'll have to look it up.
I know two other versions of a song called Crying in the Rain, which are not the same songs, but...
Yeah.
You're right, Rose. It was Everly Brothers. I got their Wikipedia up.
Thank you. And it's really good. I mean, it did an excellent job. Morten Harkett did a really good job. And he sang his own harmony, too, which is fantastic. So, the album itself, like I said, it's a little bit darker than what they had been used to. And it would continue to get like that. When you get into 93 with Memorial Beach, that's some heavy-duty stuff. I mean, it's just really like, whoa. This is bleak. But it was what they were wanting. It was selling there. It didn't do so well over here. And Europe loved it, and of course Norway loved it. So they just continued on and just made things that they wanted to make. I think this one was also... I want to say it was produced by Ian Stanley, who used to be in Tears for Fears. It was co-produced. He actually wrote some of the music, too, which was great. Because usually Pal Wachtar and Magna Furman write a lot of the songs. I think Ian Stanley, well, he produced a lot of, he didn't write any of that. He produced a lot of the songs that are on the album. So.
Yeah, looking but at the album on Wikipedia, you're right. I don't see that it really even touched the charts in the U.S.
Mm-mm. No. I think it would have been, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Norwegian, Austrian, Swiss singles chart, UK, Irish, that was all Crying in the Rain. And then French and German for I Call Your Name. I haven't heard, I wouldn't say a song on this album. I guess if you had to recommend a song from the album, would you say Crying in the Rain would do it?
I would say that if you wanted something obvious.
What does it for you? Let's put it that way.
Early Morning.
Early Morning, okay.
And Waiting for Her. They're a little bit more upbeat than most of the songs on here, but they have, I don't know, I guess they just have a lot to say.
Okay.
Emotionally, they have quite a bit to say. So.
All right. Scott, had you heard of this one?
I don't know this one at all. I know one song by A-ha. That's it. That's
yeah. I think we covered that. Yeah. I agree with you. I'm with you. That's about the my extent of A-ha. But it's interesting that you bring this up as one of your top albums from 1990s. You know, one that is just didn't even get any U.S. airplay. Or I mean, if it did, it got minimal.
Right.
But that's really cool. It's really cool that you're, you know, even though they, you know, it seems to be a departure for them, but you were, you're a devoted fan. You know, I think, you know, much like you know, someone else we know about, Bruce Springsteen, you know, can do mm-hmm. no wrong. And I'm thinking, aha, can do no wrong in your eyes.
No, they can't, really.
Yeah. That was a little shout out for Jesse.
That was a shout out. Hey, Jesse, we love you, man.
So, Scott, you want to go next?
Yeah, sure, I'll go.
All right.
I'm toying with which one do I start with? So I'm gonna start one that it came out in the late '90s. So it was June of 1999. Now, mm-hmm. let me ask you: do either of you speak Spanish?
I had 2 years of Spanish, barely. But I can't say that I can speak it.
Barely.
Okay, so neither do I. Okay. I took Spanish in high school for like, you know, one semester, but nothing stuck. You know, I know how to count, and that's about it. And you hear mm-hmm. a few words, pick up a few words here and there. If you're around Spanish-speaking people enough, you'll pick up a few words. But this album was a lot of it has a lot of Spanish vocals in it that I don't understand what they're saying, but I love this album, and it's Santana's Supernatural.
Oh, nice.
And Santana, I mean, first of all, Carlos Santana, what an amazing guitarist. And in one of the songs, they actually listen, one of the lyrics is listening to Carlos Santana make it his. What is the word? I can't remember the lyrics now. Oh, but they, you know, just his playing is so signature.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to say unique. It's signature. When you hear Santana, you know it. You know that's who it is. And mm-hmm. he brought in a powerhouse of artists to step in and play little parts here and there on this album. Like the one that caught my attention right off the bat was Smooth with Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
That song, it caught my attention the first time I heard. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And I think I heard that it was Santana after the, like, you know, immediately after, oh, that was Santana, blah blah, you know, the DJ goes on. So I'm like, you know, this is just catching my attention. I heard one other song. I can't remember which one it was, but it was one that featured mostly all English lyrics at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I bought the album and I put it on, and every song was like grabbing me. You know, it was like just, it had such a cool, unique sound with the mix of the Spanish influence or the Mexican influence, mm-hmm. whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it, that sound, and also had a little bit of like an African, well, one of the songs called Africa Bamba, which it has mm-hmm. kind of a that sound to it too, like it was influenced by maybe a trip to Africa or something. You got some sounds from them. But this whole thing is just great. You got Rob Thomas, you've got one of the bands that helped out was Everlast. You got Dave Matthews. You've got CeeLo Green and Lauryn Hill. You've got Eric Clapton. I thought Dave Matthews was on two, but I'm not seeing it now. I thought it was on two of the songs. But anyway, that lineup, I mean, playing with Santana, I can listen to it over and over and over again. It's a very exciting album. One of my favorite songs. One of my favorite songs on it is called "Migra," which means people.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got a really great beat to it, great rhythm. You know, it just goes. It's just so cool. It's really a great album. If you guys don't know the album, like if you've heard a couple songs or at least just Smooth, I would definitely check out this album.
Yeah.
I know it was late in the 90s, and or 99, mid-99, so it really bled into early 2000, but it caught my attention right away. I listen to it still to this day quite often.
Nice.
So outside of Smooth, is Migra the one that gets you going?
I I typically crank it up. There's a couple that are like, there's a couple on here that even have a like a hip hop rap sound to them.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's hard to explain. The other one that's really cool is Maria Maria.
Yeah, that's the one I was remembering.
I think that's the one that they had on the radio. I think that was probably mm-hmm. the one that I heard as like the second one. I'm like, man, this is, the sound of this is just really great. And I think the production value on this one was outstanding too. It's just you can mm-hmm. just hear when you listen to it, you can just hear so many different sounds so precisely. It was very precise.
Mm-hmm.
Very well done. So can you tell I'm excited about this album?
I can tell.
Yeah.
Hey. I hope I'm not overselling it, because if you don't understand Spanish, you're not going to understand half the lyrics in this thing. But it's the sound of the music that Santana puts out on this album that just blew me away.
So, Rose, where are you at with Supernatural?
I do remember bits and pieces. I remember Smooth and Maria Maria. I didn't necessarily listen to the whole entire album, but I'm familiar enough with Carlos Santana to know that he doesn't make crap, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And his name is synonymous with just amazing music. I just, you know, he's like one of those people like Eric Clapton and B.B. King and people like that their whole entire body and soul exudes music,
mm-hmm.
and they live specifically for that purpose. You know, even honestly, I think if you didn't pay them, they would probably still do it. You know, it's just something, people like that are just so massively talented like that. It's just, you're wondering how it can be contained, you know, and I think that's why they get so many people around them, you know, to share mm-hmm. everything that they're doing. You know, like you get like these big like A-listers come all together and they're just, you know, participating, but they're just drawn into that, you know, that magic
mm-hmm.
it creates.
I mean, they're the people that consider working with Santana a privilege also. Like working with Absolutely. Eric Clapton. Like Santana's got to look at Eric Clapton. I'm like, wow, I got Eric Clapton on my album. And Eric Clapton's going, wow, I'm going to be on Santana's album. I mean,
yeah,
that, you know, that's the
exactly.
level of, yeah, that's yeah. It's pretty cool. So, yeah, this is really, check it out. Everybody, check it out. Seriously, it's really good.
I'm going to have to revisit this.
The thing that I've always been impressed by Santana is that, you know, a lot to what you just said was, you know, you had... Yeah, a guitar player. You know, let's mm-hmm. yeah, let's put it to the basics. He's a guitar player. You know, mm-hmm. but it was Santana and Rob Thomas. It wasn't mm-hmm. Rob Thomas. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, no, you're Santana first and then Rob Thomas. And it,
right.
because mm-hmm. he had the chops to pull that off.
Or Dave Matthews. This yeah. is Santana mm-hmm. and Dave Matthews just happens to be privileged enough to join them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and so I, you know, I know Smooth, but I know a lot of, you know, I've heard a lot of Santana, and he's an amazing, amazing artist. So I can see how this would play well, but I've never digested a whole album of his, so I'm curious now.
This is the only one that I've ever done where I've listened to the whole album of
okay.
Santana. Yeah, so I don't know like his older stuff. I know the songs that you hear throughout the years, but I don't know
yeah.
his albums, like in an album, whole album sense.
Yeah, but the guy yeah. doesn't disappoint, is what I'm saying. You know, you
oh, no.
you know you're getting quality product. You know, if he's involved.
Yeah,
and he doesn't have to. He's not the lead singer, and it's crazy to think of it that way. But, you know, and he pulls it off. He, you know, and I would think that, you know, anybody that would be like, be asked, you know, any artist would be like, you want me to be on your album? I'm there. Sign me up.
Yeah.
I don't care, you know, how big you are.
It's just, when you said that he's not even the lead singer, it just kind of reminds me of the culture back in the 40s of the big bands.
Uh-huh.
You know, like Benny Goodman and, you know, Duke Ellington and people right. like that. They, you would see them playing in their band, but whenever they'd have somebody fronting, you know, for them, like Lena Horne or, you know, or Pearl, what is it? Not a, what's her name? Pearl Bailey, not Pearl Bailey.
What's Minnie her name? Pearl?
No.
Pearl.
No.
What are we going back to? Hee Haw here or what?
No, but when you're like Doris Day or somebody really, you know, focused like that, somebody that was out there, and they would be, and, you know, they would play with him, or he'd have like other musicians, would, like Cab Calloway would have, you know, other musicians come in and he would play. It's that level of brilliance to where, yeah, this is my band and I want to have other people sing and play besides me.
I love
collaborating. I can see that, you know, and they can see the talent, and they can see it for what it is, and and there's a bit of marketing in that too,
right?
You know, they know that.
Oh,
like,
right. Hmm. They're bringing in a whole new demographic.
Yeah, yeah, and you they're know, like, huh? I wonder if I had this person.
Like you the know. One that's there's one called "Do You Like the Way?" and it's very it's got kind of that, like I was saying, kind of a hip hop rap sound, and it's got CeeLo mm-hmm. Green. CeeLo Green yeah. on there before yeah. CeeLo Green was even before anybody knew who he even was. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And then it's really got that kind of a sound. So you're mm-hmm. you're grabbing a audience that you wouldn't normally grab with Santana.
Absolutely.
So yeah, absolutely. Very, very brilliant marketing in that sense.
Ella Fitzgerald. So,
Ella. Ella. Not Stella.
Ella, yeah. Minnie Pearl, honestly.
Hey, you know, Minnie Pearl is the one that started with keeping your tags on your merchandise. I just got to put that out there.
Howdy.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's the one that kept that tag hanging off her hat, right? You
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then in like the 2000s or late 90s, people started doing that, leaving all their tags on their hats and stuff, and it was, I'm like, this is odd, but it's been done before. like 30 years ago. So anyway, let's move on. Dave, what's your pick?
Yeah.
Or you said you didn't ever heard a couple songs though. So yeah, it's your turn to pick.
Yo, I'll be back in a minute. Don't go away.
Turn on to the hottest sounds of the 90s.
Get your love. Baby, the stars are shining for you.
It's Totally 90s, the most explosive collection of 90s hits ever.
Don't turn around.
Ace of Base.
Cause you can't change the way
36 non-stop hits.
Are you strong enough to be my man?
You make me wanna.
Over 2 hours of the freshest sounds of the decade. The original Macarena. Groove to the music of your favorite 90s stars. Totally 90s on 2 CDs or 2 cassettes. You won't find this one in any store. To order, call the number on your screen or send check or money order for $21.99 for 2 cassettes or $26.99 for 2 CDs plus shipping and handling. Must be 18 or older to call.
Is your home a Nickelodeon home?
Nick, 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 Nick.
Dad's eating dinner. The dog's got his bone. I get it. That's the phone. Mom's at the table, dishing the food. Everybody's in a very good mood. Singing Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon.
Bud says, says, what's the channel for kids?
I don't know.
Come on, tell me what it is.
Nick, 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 Nickelodeon.
Be like us, watch Nickelodeon on cable TV.
Now back to the show.
I know I said that I was not, like, you know, as commercial as or vanilla, as I put it, in the 90s. So, I even though this album is, like, one of the top 100 albums from the 1990s, so it's not, like, an obscure pick by any means. But at the same time, you gotta consider, you know, where I was in my life. You know, and in this case, it was 91, you know, when it was released, and I don't think I really became appreciative of the grunge scene, unlike Scott, where I appreciated it. I loved, you know, a lot of those, that sound and the vibe of that. I was all in, you know, for that scene. But based on where I was, you know, I was newly minted into the Navy. You know, and, you know, I was, you know, and everything was spit and polish. Everything was, you know, you had to be dressed a certain way. You had the uniform. You had the spit and shine. You know, you had certain requirements that were part of this. So grunge wasn't, you know, that was very anti that look.
Right.
to say the least. But it was just something that I... you know, that I found that I really appreciated, and I just really dug the sound of it. So in 91, Pearl Jam released their album 10. To me, it is still, I mean, it's a force to be reckoned with for the grunge sound. And when people think of the grunge sound, they think of this album. And when I got, say, 93, 94, I was in Virginia as one of my duty stations, and a good friend of mine, Steve, we would go to this place in Norfolk, Virginia, or actually I think it was Virginia Beach, Virginia, called The Machine, and it was a alternative music sounding, you know, that's all they played. You'd go there, and that was the music. So we would be going there, and as we were coming and going, we were jamming out to Pearl Jam, we were jamming out to Soundgarden, we were jamming out to Stone Temple Pilots, and while we were there, we're getting all of that played by those wonderful DJs that were there, and of course, you know, not having enough guts to ask girls to dance, drinking our Zimas, thinking we're cool. Yeah. All right. So, you know, it was, you know, Pearl Jam was the bomb. You know, as far as, like, songs that were included in this, you know, there were, I mean, for the song that just became the go-to standard, this song came on, it would get turned up and sang along with every word. Jeremy loved this song. And even though the tone of it is so dark, you know, you have this kid that is essentially getting, I wouldn't say abused, but he's getting ignored. And then he decides that he's going to shoot up his, you know, his schoolmates, or he kills himself, you know, in the video or whatever it was. It's dark. Is way dark, but there's just something about Eddie Vedder's delivery in his heart and his soul of the delivery of every song. I don't even know how the guy can talk anymore, because he's so talented to be able to what he puts into every performance. I was a big fan of Even Flow, Alive, Porch, but yeah, Jeremy for me was it. It was that was a song to end all songs. Loved every bit of this album. Either one of you, I mean, did you at least appreciate the album, or was it just because it was grunge you weren't really interested?
Rose, you want to take this first?
my goodness. Gosh, Pearl Jam. Yeah, they're out of Seattle, that's for sure. No, I just honestly, I just can't. I don't really know a whole lot. I know about Eddie Vedder, and I know that he's a very intense young man, and his music comes across as just something that you know, just oozes out of his body, I guess. I don't know. People like that, that they kind of scare me because they're just so into what they're doing, you know, and it's almost like, I'm not even sure how to explain this, but if you were to, like, take what they're doing away from them, they would just collapse on the floor. Like, that's the only thing that's keeping them going. You know what I'm saying? Is that making any sense? I don't want to sound too weird, but...
No, I mean, you can see the intensity. Their body
so strong.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and honestly, I didn't really listen to... I knew it was going on all around. People were making fun about the plaid shirts and all of that stuff. And, you know, it's just like all of these, you know, grunge bands are, you know, coming out of the woodwork, so to speak. And these guys are actually, they were an offshoot from a previous band, if I wasn't mistaken.
Yeah, that would have been Mother Love Bone.
Yeah, with Andrew Wood, and it just kind of catapulted from there. It's just like there were, you know, Nirvana, and then Soundgarden, and then Temple of the Dog, and, you know, all of these other bands are just all started coming out, which was great, you know, because I think that grunge is a very integral part of music history. Make no bones about it. I truly believe that. And I truly believe it came out of some of the more tragic moments in, you know, the late 80s, early 90s that society was experiencing, and it needed to have a voice, you know. So thank you, grunge, for bringing that to our attention and, you know, hipping us to what was really going on in the suburbs and downtown and the back streets and all of those other places that things were... We were trying to forget, you know, because we always wanted to just see the good stuff. Never heard the album. I can honestly say I never heard. I may have heard one song on it. Like I said, it's not... When I went back down memory lane, it wasn't something that I wanted to revisit.
Okay.
Only because I just... You know, I didn't know. I just didn't know how much it would make... How much of a difference it would make to me hearing it now. That sounds like a cop out, and oh well.
No, I,
you know what I'm saying?
No, I get what you're saying though, but I appreciate you acknowledging the fact. I mean, it was kind of a see you later from the boy bands that we had, and even the age of the yuppie. You know, it was just like a, you know, no, that's not the way a lot of us live. And
no, yeah. Somebody needed to say it, you know.
Yeah.
On a more brighter note, I do remember Weird Al came out with a song called "My Baby's in Love with Eddie Vedder," which I always thought was kind of funny. Obviously, I still do if I wasn't laughing so hard. And it's you know, she's, you know, knitting him a sweater, and he doesn't understand what the big deal is. What has he got over me that I don't have? And yeah, so I thought, Eddie Vedder, isn't that that guy that sings for Pearl Jam? Yeah, he's really intense. Yeah, I could see why chicks would dig him. I don't know, but so that's a good album, honestly. And because I admitted to Scott that I would listen to Supernatural again, I'll listen to 10 only because hey, life's too short, right?
Nice.
Yeah. But you gotta listen to Aha, though.
I will do that.
Okay. Both of you.
Yep. So Scott, anything on Pearl Jam?
Yeah. So.
Oh my god. Wow.
So I know.
I'm going to stop being nice to the rest of your picks.
No, listen, I know very well four of these songs, okay?
Oh.
I know them because they were on the radio quite a bit, and like Even Flow and Alive, you know, two of their biggest hits, were definitely jammable, okay? But overall, of the whole scene, I still am trying to understand how Pearl Jam became the Goliath of that era that they were. I didn't get it. Like I kind of like those songs. Jeremy was dark and disturbing, but I was looking at it, you know, you said that it was about a kid that shot himself in it. That's true. That is what happened. Eddie Vedder was inspired by, that's not the right word. Influenced or impacted. Mm-hmm. That's it. Impacted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By an incident in January of 1991, a kid killed himself in front of his English class or English teacher or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of, a Stephen King novel called Rage, which mm-hmm. where a kid actually, he goes on a shooting rampage in school, and they started really, you know, a lot of people started backing off from this topic altogether because it was becoming too common. So that song's very disturbing. Black, I remember hearing, but I can't stand Eddie Vedder's voice. I mean, get the freaking cotton out of your mouth, dude. Seriously. Mm. I can't understand a word. Yellow Ledbetter. I think it's on the next album after this. I can't understand. I mean, you can't understand. I don't understand what he's saying. And now some people will say about that about some of the heavy metal albums that I listen to. You know, oh, they're just screaming. You know, and I understand some of them do sound like they're just screaming. But I just couldn't understand them. So it kind of turned me off. I just couldn't get it. So, and of that whole grunge scene coming out of Seattle, they were my least favorite. I like Soundgarden and Stone Temple Pilots so much better. I don't know if they were from Seattle specifically, but that sound, you know, I know Nirvana was from up there. I didn't care for Nirvana that much, but the Foo Fighters, I love Dave Grohl. I just don't understand this Pearl Jam. They were huge, and it didn't hit me that way.
I think we lost Scott. Did we lose Scott? I think we lost Scott.
Hey. We can't always agree on everything, right?
No, we can't.
No, it's actually boring.
I hope you appreciate my passion that I dislike this album.
Yeah, fuck you, Scott. Did I stretch it out?
Wow. Wow. That was harsh.
No, I, All right. I didn't make fun of any of your picks.
I only made one, so you can make fun of whatever, you know, if you want to make fun of my next two picks, that's okay. I'll go with that.
All
right. One you won't know, the other one you probably can make fun of.
Well, Santana didn't even sing, so deal with that, okay? At least Eddie Vedder did. Back to the, I don't even know where to go with that, man. You were just like dissing Eddie Vedder. Praising the guy, and you're like dissing him. I don't even know what to do now.
I won't say that I don't respect them. I know that they had a huge influence. I know they're talented musicians, and that's great. But I just didn't. It never resonated with me.
All right, well, no, I totally get that. And I get that because of the fact that there's artists that are uber famous that I don't get. I don't understand why people like them. And you know, right. I can go on the list, but there's no reason to. I get what you're saying. You know, and Pearl Jam seem to have done that for you.
Okay.
Um,
everybody has their thing that just really.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that you're just like, I don't get it, and I don't appreciate it, or I don't understand that people like this guy. So I totally get that.
My wife loves Eddie Vedder, and I'm still trying to grasp it. So it's just me. It's just me.
You know, both Chrissy and I wanted to be truck drivers. We both have an appreciation for Batman. We like Eddie Vedder. I think maybe I should have been with Chrissy. So
okay, we should have her on the show.
People that like my picks. Damn you, Scott. All right.
Oh. Huh.
So we're on pick number 2 for Rose.
Yeah, it's just funny. And that new.
Are you seriously picking the greatest hits of Buckwheat?
Yeah, how'd you guess?
Okay.
Turned that didn't come out in the 90s. No, actually, I'm going even more obscure than I went before.
Wow.
Just because I love that Aha.
Are we going because with another Aha album?
Actually, we're going with an album that their lead singer made, Morton Harkett.
Mm.
Mind you, it won't be one of the ones that is in Norwegian, because that would be very difficult. I don't speak Norwegian. But in 1995, Morten Harkett came out with an album called Wild Seed. And I listened to it for the first time in, like, oh God, 2000-something. And just absolutely fell in love with it. It was different. It was different from anything that Aha had ever done. And you actually got to see him by himself doing his own music. Because if you recall, his bandmates wrote most of the songs for the Aha album. This album, he wrote most of the songs himself. And my need to listen to this on a daily basis at some point just was really strong, because that's how really strong the album was. There is another cover on here. It's by Andrew Gold. Honestly, don't remember Andrew Gold singing the song, but apparently he made it famous before Morten Harkett put it on his album. It's called Ready to Go Home. And it's basically a song about somebody giving up and wanting to die, pretty much. And he says he's ready to go home. He's just ready to go home. His family, Morten Harkett's family, his uncle, is very heavily steeped in the church at when this was going on. And so he was a very integral part of a men's choir in Norway, in Oslo. So there's a lot of spiritual connotations going on in this album. And there's really good songs called, like, Kind of a Christmas Card. Spanish Steps, that's a good one. Half in Love, Half in Hate, Brodsky's Tune. The title song, Wild Seed. He sings a lot about Los Angeles, and I'm assuming that at some point he was actually there, and the city had that effect on him, so he felt like he had to write about it. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. It's a really, really good album. And for him to have that come out of him after being with AHA for 11 years at this point? You know, it's not just their talent collectively. Each one of them is their own master of their own talent. So, I don't know. I just... The fandom is deep with this group. And I challenge you to listen to at least one song from the album. I mean, you don't even have to like the ones that I like. Just pick one and listen to it. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, for on the Wikipedia page, they say this is the biggest selling AHA solo release to date.
Mhm. Yeah, so, it's pretty intense. It's an intense album.
Huh. So is it as, I guess, dark as East of the Sun, West of the Moon, or is it more pop?
It's alternative, actually.
Okay.
It's not dark and you know, you get to some of the songs. Okay, so A Kind of a Christmas Card is very dark because it talks about, I think, the way I interpret it, it talks about a daughter that ran away from home. She's a heroin addict, and she's trying to, you know, reconnect with her mom, and she's, you know, sending her a letter. And the song says it's kind of a Christmas card in a way, you know, because you're trying to cram all of this stuff that you want to say into one letter that you send every year. So, but that's kind of heavy. I mean, when you listen to it, you're going
to
go,
Should I listen to that song before or after I watch Lesson Zero?
I'd listen to it.
I'm kidding. I don't know. It just sounds like it's really dark too. So, I'm interested though.
You know what?
I do need to hear what it sounds like because I have no concept of where this is, what this sounds like.
Spanish Steps is a really good song.
Okay,
it's very flowy and melodic, and it's got some really good music in it, and his vocals are really nice on that.
I'm not trying to be an ass. I'm just coming off that.
No,
way.
That's okay. No. Yeah, you were drawn that way. I get it. There's actually
just
nice.
East Timor, which is that he wrote this song for the country East Timor. That actually is a really good kind of environmentalist song, where he talks about how they came into the country, you know, and what's the one of the first line? Sandalwood trees are evergreen, cut them down, plant coffee bean. And basically, he kind of bashes it's not the Red Cross, but he kind of bashes like one of those Save the World type of organizations for coming in there and trying to, like, change people's views on their religion and trying to help them in Bunny Rabbit Ears do better when they were already fine to start with. And now, because they're so commercialized after the, you know, these people came in, they're ashamed of themselves. And it's just, yeah, it's deep. A lot of it's deep, you know, but if you can't handle the heavy stuff, stay away from Ready to Go Home. Let's see. Yeah. Spanish Step sounds good. Put that way.
So if you want anything lighter than Spanish Steps.
Yeah.
Everything else is kind of deep.
Alright. It's just good all around. Honestly, you should just pull on your big boy undies and just listen to the whole thing. Yeah.
Probably big boy undies.
Alrighty.
I've got nothing on this. Scott, I assume you're the same. Yeah, I figured.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Before you started talking, I had no idea this album even existed. So, yeah. It sounds cool. You know, mm-hmm. If it's got an alternative sound to it, it sounds like something that would have been in my wheelhouse in the 90s.
Yeah.
I don't even see anything on the Wikipedia page that even mentions, like, hitting any charts.
Mm-mm.
So I think it was like
I'm sure he hit plenty of charts over in Norway and Oslo, but
yeah. So all right, well, cool. I'm glad that did it for you.
Thanks.
Scott, we'll go with your second pick, even though I'm sure it's going to be completely lame. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud? I didn't mean to.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Why should he be allowed to be an ass? Go ahead, Scott. Damn it.
You're cracking me up, dude. Okay. Well, I think I'm going to have to bring a powerhouse that was actually like a serious contender for a top 100.
This has been a Bonsai Retro Club production.
Bonsai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Bonsai!